There you go. I'm always afraid of these mics, you know, for fear of the offhand comments that I always make. And then to my left is Gary Hernandez. Gary is an attorney. Actually, he was named as one of the top attorneys in California. He keeps us all on the straight and narrow. Gary was appointed by the Speaker of the Assembly. Sitting next to Gary is Fred Klass. Fred represents the Director of Finance, Tom Campbell, and Fred is a long-term member of the Conservancy. And next to Fred is Reed Addis, who is here on behalf of Assemblyman John Laird. I'd also like to introduce Marcia Grimm. Marcia, there you are. And Marcia is our staff counsel and also Deputy Attorney General Pat Peterson, who's right here. So we're well protected from the legal standpoint. The Conservancy is actually one of those few government agencies that has no power to harm anyone. And instead of that, actually, our goal and role is to protect California's coastal resources and hopefully to provide greater access to the public for the coast. And all of us enjoy that very much. We also very much appreciate the wonderful tour of the harbor and the reception that you all had for us yesterday. All of us volunteer our time, so when we're away from home, it's especially nice that people welcome us, and it was really good to meet everyone as well. If anyone's planning to speak, please fill out one of these cards. And Carmen, who has a sign that says legal staff.
I want to use the mic.
Carmen Estrada Pauly is our assistant who will take those cards from you, and we'll try to call on anyone that wants to speak. Okay, Carmen, would you please call the roll?
Ms. Karen Scarborough? Ms. Ann Nothoff? Mr. Gary Hernandez?
Present.
Mr. Fred Klass?
Here.
Chair Bosco?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay. The second order of business is to approve the minutes of the last meeting. Do I hear a motion that they be approved? Okay. It's been moved and seconded by Mr. Hernandez that the minutes be approved. Those in favor say aye. And those opposed, no. Minutes are approved. Now we are going to have a presentation by the mayor of Morro Bay.
Oh.
Should we try Pismo Beach first, or?
Okay, when we're in Pismo, you can go first. Okay. Hello, I'm Janice Peters. I'm the mayor of Morro Bay, and I just wanted to welcome you here. We're delighted to have you. You do so much for us, and it's wonderful to have the opportunity to thank you in person. As far as the reception last night, I wanted to make sure that credit went to all the people who contributed to that, because it certainly wasn't just the city of Morro Bay. It was also supported by Port San Luis Harbor District, the Surfrider San Luis Bay Chapter, the Central Coast Fisheries Conservation Coalition, the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization, and the Port San Luis Lighthouse Keepers Association. So they were all your hosts at that get-together last night. Morro Bay, as I had the chance to discuss with some of you, and as I'm sure you all know, is primarily supported by our tourist industry. So the things that you do to help us maintain and encourage that are things that we could not do on our own, and we appreciate them very much. Our beloved and beleaguered fishing industry needs your support, and the ice machine help that you've given us in the dock is really important to preserve that heritage, which is our history, it's our heart, and certainly helps to bring our tourists here. So,
thank you. Once again, we are so grateful. Being consistent with your mission statement, you have made a tremendous contribution to our community. Our plaque will show a few photos of a few of your contributions, including two stairways that have provided beach access, one at Vista Del Mar and one we call the Pier Avenue stairway. The Dinosaur Caves Park is just a showcase, and that park is getting better and better with time. It's an 11-acre park with incredible views of the Pacific Ocean, and your agency helped with the grading and the trail work and the design, and it's just going to be a phenomenal park when it's completed, so we're very grateful. In addition, you've helped us with the promenade connecting Pismo Beach with Grover, and that is a wonderful pathway. I've used it many times myself, and there are so many people that enjoy that access. In the early 90s, you helped us with the handicapped access on the southern part of Pismo Beach that's still used to this day and is now also connected with part of the promenade. And you've also funded signage throughout the city to help people find access to the beach and the views. And again, thank you very much.
And I'm just going to read two paragraphs out of this and present these to you. Whereas the Coastal Conservancy has contributed over $778,000 for the design and construction of coastal open space and access improvements in the city of Pismo Beach, now therefore be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Pismo Beach is forever grateful to the Coastal Conservancy for their dedication and financial commitment to the preservation and enhancement of coastal resources benefiting Pismo Beach residents and visitors. The City Council extends a warm and sincere thank you to the Coastal Conservancy Board and staff for their historic and continuing efforts to enhance the public's enjoyment of the California coast. Signed, Mary Ann Reese, Mayor. We are so appreciative. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. Our first set of projects will be on the Central Coast, leading off with Marina Cazorla. Marina?
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman Bosco, members of the board. I'm here to present a property acquisition project along the coast within the City of Pacifica and in partnership with the City of Pacifica. The 2.17-acre property called the Pacifica Esplanade property would offer about 600 additional feet of coastal trail and public access. The City of Pacifica will match our $250,000 grant and will undertake coastal trail and planning and construction as soon as funding becomes available for that. If we can pull up the site map here, you'll see that this is in northern Pacifica, and there are other coastal trail projects in the works that City Council Member Jim Vreeland will talk about in a moment. The project is supported by State Senator Jackie Speer, State Assembly Member Gene Mullen, San Mateo County Supervisor Richard Gordon, and now I'm going to ask Jim Vreeland, who is City of Pacifica Council Member, to discuss how this project is going to fit into the larger picture of Pacifica's coastal trail planning and public access planning.
Good morning, Chairman Bosco and members of the Conservancy. My name is Jim Vreeland, and I've been on the Pacifica City Council for about 6 years. And I just want to thank the staff and the Conservancy for, first, the historical support you've given us on the acquisitions of a lot of 2.5 acres in our southern part of the town. This section, northern part of town, is 2.2 acres. It's on an eroding coastal bluff. It is two parcels north of the houses that Pacifica lost during the 1998 El Niños. Those houses were washed away. With your support, and we've been able to provide money for improvements where the houses used to be, this parcel was just north of it and was slated for some 40 apartments. And so working with the owner, working with the pretty creative financing, we were able to purchase this property for $500,000, $250,000 from the Conservancy, and $250,000 from mitigation money we got from PG&E on acquisition in the Crystal Springs Reservoir. So we took mitigation money that was used for open space acquisition on the reservoir and used that for the match for the Conservancy money. So for a small amount of money, we can purchase 2 acres on the California coast. And in, put it in perspective, you can't find a house in Pacifica on a 500.
Said enough. We'll see. Is there a motion that we approve this item? Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Class and seconded by Ms. Scarborough that we approve item number 4. Those in favor say aye. And those opposed, no. And that item is approved. Thank you very much for your good work, too. Okay, we'll go on to item 5, Mary Travis. This is an access project in Isla Vista.
Good morning, Chairman Bosco, board members. Staff recommends that the Conservancy assist the County of Santa Barbara with the reconstruction of 3 public beach access ways along Del Playa Drive in the community of Isla Vista. Isla Vista has a nice stretch of beach and 5 public stairways to get down to it, all at street ends along Del Playa Drive. Exhibit 1, the second page, indicates the 3 that are of interest to us. These stairways are about 40 years old. They get heavy public use. They're subject to rough surf and rough weather, and they're pretty deteriorated, and they often have to be closed for repairs. In Exhibit 2, you can see a few close-ups of the accessways. The County Public Works Department has maintained them over the decades, but they've reached the point where they need reconstruction. Of course, there's a high demand for coastal access in Santa Barbara County. This is particularly true in Isla Vista. It's a pretty tightly packed little community filled with UCSB students and some low-income families. And in addition to these local users, the Isla Vista Beach draws beachgoers and surfers from throughout the county. And the fact that UCSB is right here means that visitors from all over come to this beach. So we don't want to lose access here. And I'll point out that this project has the support of Assemblymember Pedro Nava, as well as that of the students and the administration of UCSB and the Surfrider Foundation. This project would continue the Conservancy's role in providing public access in Isla Vista. You'll remember that at the June meeting, you approved a grant to the county for the acquisition of 3 blufftop parcels on Del Playa Drive that will become part of a new 2-acre park. And that site, maybe we could go back to at some point, Exhibit 1, we don't have to, second page. That site is on the block between the Escondido Pass and Camino Pescadero stairways. For this project, the county's raised some matching funds. Our grant would enable them to start construction within the next few months with the goal of completing the project before next summer. And once the work is completed, the county intends to transfer ownership of the 3 accessways to the Isla Vista Recreation and Park District, which is in a better position than the County Public Works Department to maintain beach accessways. And here from the Isla Vista Recreation and Park District is Derek Johnson, the general manager, who will say a few words, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mary.
Good morning, Chairman Bosco and members of the Conservancy Board. Again, my name is Derek Johnson. I'm the general manager of the Isla Vista Recreation and Park District. I'm here today to represent both the district and the County of Santa Barbara. They couldn't make it today, so they asked me to come and speak on behalf of this project. These 3 beach access ways that are proposed for our renovation are critical access ways to the Isla Vista beaches. Many students and visitors come to, you know, check out the academic excellence of UCSB, and at the same time they're met with this wonderful view of the Santa Barbara Channel Islands and, you know, and the beaches surrounding the campus. Because of the very high cliffs, the only way to get down to the beach is through the 5 access ways along Del Playa Drive. As Mary mentioned, these access ways are over 40 years old. They're in need of significant repair, and we have come up with some engineering and design solutions which we've applied to one of the access ways about 4 years ago, and it's really stood up to the extreme surf and marine environment down along Isla Vista beaches. I do want to report back to the Conservancy Board that your investment in the park along Del Playa Drive has paid off. The county has raised the additional funds to acquire all five parcels so that a whole acquisition project can be completed. And I'm also happy to announce that we're going to name that park after our congressperson in the area, Walter Capps, who passed away a few years ago. Again, I want to thank the Conservancy Board for your past generosity and your support.
And that depicts the series of stairways along Studio Drive. However, according to county engineers, over the past 20 years, the stairways have suffered considerable damage, and their structural integrity is in question. And if they're not reconstructed soon, several of these stairways will have to be closed to the public. Within the next year to 2 years. I would note that if the grant funds are approved by us, one of the conditions will again require the county to maintain these stairways for the next 20-year period. I'd also want to note, and Joan Carlino, our access program manager, reminded me that the county was one of the first to accept nearly all of its OTDs, and they've done an excellent job of opening those up as they get funds to do so. So we've been very appreciative of their efforts to open and maintain these access ways, and some of them over OTDs. The project supported by Senator Maldonado and Assemblyman Blakeslee, as well as the County of San Luis Obispo and the Surfrider Foundation. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Tim. Are there any questions?
Okay. I was going to ask this on the last one, but since the stairways there had been built 40 years ago, I assume they weren't conservancy funded. But these are were conservancy funded, and they're falling apart now.
In 1983, so. That's correct.
So we're going to build them so that they won't fall apart?
For at least another 20 years.
Okay.
Yeah, all of them provide access to the beach along Cayuga State Beach, so it's they're exposed to elements, and yeah, they'll be required for another 20 years.
Another 20 years?
Yep.
Okay. That's the standard?
That's the standard, yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Do I hear a motion that we approve this? Mr. Class moves. Mr. Hernandez seconds that we approve item number 6. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. And that item is approved. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Chairman.
Okay. Now we're going on to the two Bay Area projects, Sonoma Creek with Tom Gansberry. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is Tom Gansberry. I'm a project manager in the Bay Program. I'm going to talk to you about the phase two of the Sonoma Creek Enhancement Project. Staff is recommending that the Conservancy authorize a disbursement of up to $757,000 to the Sonoma County Resource Conservation District to continue work on this important project. And I will mention for the record, I guess, that we changed the staff rec on your digitally, I guess, yesterday. There was a typo in the original resolution. The funding for this project would be used to carry out hydraulic modeling, analyze sediment transport, prepare NEPA CEQA documents, and to fund the Resource Conservation District's work and public involvement and outreach, as well as arrive at finally at some conceptual designs for restoration. The project is located in southern Sonoma County, shown in Exhibits 2A and 2B. And roughly, the project area runs from just north of the hamlet of Shellville southward to San Pablo Bay. I don't know if does the next exhibit show the bay? Can you scroll down? There's the bay. So San Pablo Bay is at the bottom of the photograph there. This project we also received a support letter from Senator Wesley Chesbrough, which is on Exhibit 3. And Phase 1 of the project, which the Conservancy funded in the year 2000, received broad support from environmental groups and local government. The project would be funded by the Sonoma County Water Agency, the Army Corps of Engineers, and the Conservancy. The project addresses the complementary goals of river restoration, wetland restoration along the river, and flood reduction. The areas listed as a priority for us in our goals, wetland ecosystem wetland goals report, which I'm sure you've heard reference to before, as well as our own strategic plan. The upper reaches and tributaries of the creek have been studied for over a decade by the Sonoma Ecology Center and the RCD and others, and these watershed studies have helped hone and define the scope of the work that the RCD is proposing to do. I want to draw your attention to this map. It shows you some of the larger parcels that are in the study area. These parcels, which are called camps, Camp 2 through 5, I believe, are historically seasonal and tidal wetlands that were converted over to agricultural use, and they're, I would say, 90% hay farms. There's some vineyard cropping in from the north, but essentially the larger areas are hay farms. Camp 2, which is on this map here, as 700 acres, was purchased by Department of Fish and Game recently and would dissipate flooding. And so impacts to flooding are along Highway 121 there. And I also pointed out very few homes in the area. They're farms. We don't have a big town that is impacted. But we do have this, just as an example, the Shellville Fire Station, which had to be relocated because the fire station itself was being flooded out every year. So this is historically a floodplain, and the studies will look at ways to, they've been getting a handle on, further handle on how the water flows through the watershed and possible alternatives to alleviating the flooding. So possible outcomes, as we've seen in other similar projects, would be levee setbacks, possibly recommending the purchase of land along the river, and as well as the real potential to divert floodwaters onto Camp 2 Island or other islands, which are in public ownership. The RCD, as I mentioned, is well-versed in public involvement and coordination with landowners, and they've become very familiar with the role of the Army Corps, I wanted to mention, and the best way to tap the federal resources of the Corps. So this is really the RCD's project with some involvement by the Army Corps, as opposed to some of our other projects, which are the flip side of that. And also Fish and Game is integral to the project. Obviously, they're one of the largest landowners adjacent to the project or within the project study area. And the management at Fish and Game in Yountville is highly supportive of the project. And that concludes my presentation. I can take a look. Any questions?
Just to clarify, I'm not sure if that's true or not, but this is a study, 1.3 million of study, that potentially does not influence.
Turn your mic on.
Major project. I'm pushing it, and the light's not coming on.
Can you hear
me?
Yes.
This is 1.3 for a study.
Right? A series of studies. Hydrology, hydraulics, design.
It would influence the direction of projects, and so subsequent projects would come back, or this area has been identified as a priority, or this specific study? Or can you talk to me more about how the study is a precursor to projects that might come?
The outcomes would be along the creek near the bridge.
But there would be subsequent funding and
yes.
additional funding. And then how would those, does the RCD then take the leadership in guiding the consultant, or is there a consultant identified in a project? I'm presuming this was a response to an RFP for the planning. It's just a lot of money for a plan, and just kind of intrigued with
yeah.
the sequencing of this much money on a plan and when the projects will start.
Yeah, it's not just one plan. There are a number of items that the RCD would undertake. The largest is the hydrology modeling, which is $250,000, roughly. The Army Corps portion at this point is the surveying, and in this fiscal year, they've only been able to do part of that, but they're actually out in the field right now because they want to get some of the money spent before the end of the federal fiscal year. That's about $90,000 of a $300-and-something-thousand-dollar item for just surveying, aerial surveys and ground surveys of the creek. But it's impossible to say what the final project or projects will be. I'm sure they'll come up with a series of recommendations. Some will be easy and some will be more difficult or more expensive to undertake.
And then would the RCD take those recommendations and choose from that, or would it come back to this board, or how does the Conservancy continue to work with the RCD in the
RCD outcome? Would be the lead. And
so this is a grant to them?
Yes.
So and then they're in charge of facilitating the study?
Yeah.
Okay.
And originally they did come to us with a split proposal, money from WCB, money from us, and we sat down with Fish and Game and said, look, a lot of this land is yours. WCB has an easier time, as I understand it, of funding implementation projects. So sort of the informal situation we have now is that they'll go back to WCB at some point for implementation.
Great. Thank you.
Tom, do you anticipate that this will become an Army Corps of Engineer project?
No, that's... No.
So, okay,
no.
So
originally, they came in, I think, on the order of 4 years ago, and the Army Corps did their sort of the first level feasibility,
right,
called the
reconnaissance
report,
study, right,
and they said it was going to be $4.5 million just to do the design, you know, the work that we're talking about today. So, and that's cost shared 50-50 with the locals, whoever the locals are. Well, there's no flood control district, assessment district here. If there was, it would be about 30 or 40 landowners. So that's a couple million dollars over 30 or 40 landowners. It just wasn't going to be feasible. So they went back and looked at ways.
Well, farmland, as you say, 40, you know, property owners. I'm sure there's more than 40 along the whole creek. But it seems to me it should be like a flood control district or something. I don't know why the Coastal Conservancy is doing hydrology studies and such things. I could see where if, you know, there was a specific purpose to improve salmon and steelhead or something like that, it might be more squarely within our jurisdiction.
Right.
Can you address that?
Sure. As I said, the dual purpose, and there's a much larger project on the Napa River that sort of set the tone for these types of projects. The Napa River Flood Control Project, it's county and Army Corps. And really what they're doing is ecosystem restoration, where they're opening up the river and letting it flood out onto lands that were originally wetlands. And that alleviates the flooding. So there's a dual purpose on that project. This would be similar. There is no flood control district. It's really an environmental restoration project from our standpoint. All the hydrology work and the civil engineering that goes into a restoration project is the same sort of work that a flood control engineer would take an interest in. So, you know, the RCD is not going to be in the role of promising a certain type of flood risk reduction, I think, but that's certainly an added benefit to the work that they would undertake.
Who will do? How does this differ from the first phase of this?
The first phase was, they went out and looked at, they took measurements of existing water, water measurements, flows, and that sort of thing in the watershed to get a sense of how much water comes down and from where. This work would be modeling potential changes to the system. So they really will undertake some serious modeling under this phase, whereas in the first phase it was a measurement of what is there now and a geomorphic study, which studies the, you know, geomorphology of the area and the history of it.
And say we do all this studying, who's going to pay to do anything about it?
That is to the future, I suppose. I think there's a great potential for some very low-cost implementation here. The problem is that, you know, we can go out in the field with, I went out with the RCD, one of their people who knows the land, and he said we happened to be out there during the flooding, not a serious flooding, but a high water situation in January, and you could see where the water was going over a certain road here or over somebody's field here. That's a natural area that you could, you might want to propose a ditch or a creek or restore something there, wetlands, but you really have to model the whole system to know what that effect would be. It may make the creek situation, the situation in the creek, worse. So the creek is, it's an interesting thing because as they went through this area and diked it off and started farming it in the 1800s up into the 1920s, the size of the creek has narrowed and narrowed and narrowed to the point where originally at Shellville they used to bring in paddle wheel river boats. And now it's so narrow that you wouldn't even want to take a small motorboat up there. I'm sure you've seen it driving over the bridge there. So there have been huge changes in the watershed. And this is typical of the lower Napa River, Novato Creek, where I'm working on Hamilton and other areas.
Tom, you're anticipating that implementation funding will come from WCB.
Yeah. The staff recommendation in the year 2000 did speak to future funders being those that are involved also in flood control, such as Caltrans and the Army Corps. But since that time, the economic picture has changed. So, you know, these studies will be concluding probably in 3 to 4 years. And at that time, they would come back and, you know, we'd have to see what is feasible at that time. But I think because we're dealing with so few landowners, we have such a large public ownership here, and we have willing folks that along the creek are willing to participate, makes it a very strong project. And also the environmental, ecological benefits that would be could be realized.
Yes.
Chair Bosco, thank you. Tom, I'd like to maybe ask a question, or maybe this is just some comments based on work that the Conservancy has approved or endorsed in the past along the Pajaro River, which is somewhat similar. And I think part of the problem that Tom's struggling with is he can't tell you point blank what the ultimate projects would look like, because a lot of it would depend upon these types of studies. I know, for example, in Mr. Laird's district and part of Mr. Salinas's district along the Pajaro River, the question is coastal access, what types of properties do you get to have opened up for either restoration or agricultural protection, based on how you move your levees, how you design levees, and a lot of that is influenced.
RCD and are willing to set their, probably take some of the vineyard out and set the levee back quite a ways onto their property. That's an area, that's a what you'd call a choke point on the river. Based on what? Based on folks from the RCD doing their subjective and very expert field look. So now we need to do the hydrology and do the modeling to look at that and perhaps support that position or analyze it. Downstream from there, we have Camp 2. Fish and Game purchased that. But the connection of the 700 acres on Camp 2 to the river is really an unknown. I mean, the levees are degraded, but there really isn't an understanding of, there isn't much water, as I understand it, getting from the river onto Camp 2. We need to look at how that would benefit the fish and wildlife on the camp. Well, the birds at this point, I don't think there are any fish on that property. Further down, camps 3 and 4 are privately owned. Those landowners are farming hay. They're brothers, I believe, and they're in their 70s. They're definitely interested in selling. Further down, there's camp 1. That's the former Biso property. And that one, I know, is up for sale or has been up for sale. So all these properties are potential restoration sites in the future. And then further down, a little bit off the map, is Skaggs Island, which is a former Navy site that I know the state and federal government are talking about transferring and eventually restoring. Similar situation there, dikes, some farmland within that is affected by Skaggs. So the hydrology studies here will definitely inform the people who are interested in restoring Skaggs Island.
But I just wanted to say, one of the things that I appreciate in the staff report is the talking about consistency with the project, with the Conservancy's strategic plan and enabling statute, and I think that you've done a good job on page 5 of the staff report to point out that how working with river hydrology is really consistent with wetland and riparian restoration, which are key to Conservancy goals. Can't let the day go by without mentioning Hurricane Katrina and how we certainly saw vividly how hydrology issues are impacted by wetland destruction, and certainly part of the solution to that is taking care of our wetlands better. So this could be a first step for that.
Okay, are there any other questions? Do I hear a motion that this item be approved?
So moved.
Okay, Mr. Hernandez moves.
Second.
Okay, there's not enough seconds that we approve item seven. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. And that item is approved. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay, Brenda Buxton has our only Bay Area Conservancy project at Pleasanton Ridge.
Good morning, Conservancy Board members and Chair Bosco. I'm here to request $400,000 for the East Bay Regional Park District to acquire 106 acres known as the Vinson property to become part of the Pleasanton Ridge Regional Open Space or Regional Park. This acquisition is critical for several reasons. Namely, it will open up the northern end of the Pleasanton Ridge Park. Right now, Pleasanton Ridge is a long park stretched out on the north-south spine of the East Bay Hills, and the only existing access is down in the southeast corner, and as you can imagine, that limits the access to the park. So once the park district has acquired the Vinson property, and the adjacent, right to the north, there's a missing short segment of the access road. So once that's also been acquired, the park district will be able to open up the northern end of Pleasanton Ridge with a staging area, access trail, and emergency access through the road. This acquisition is also critical for several other reasons. Namely, it will protect the headwaters of Devaney Creek. It will preserve the unspoiled and intact riparian corridors, the oak woodland, and the chaparral found on the property. And it will also prevent the subdivision of the property and the construction of 3 to 4 home sites, which the current property owner, is actively pursuing if this acquisition does not go through. That concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Are there any questions for Brenda? Okay, do I hear a motion that we approve item 8?
Motion made.
Ms. Garbrough moves, and Mr. Class seconds that we approve item 8. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no, and that item is approved.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Joan Cardellino has an access project in Mendocino County.
Joan. Good morning, Chairman Bosco and members of the board. Well, how could we have a board meeting go by without me talking about OTDs? to get those OTs accepted, and we partnered with local land trusts. And I should mention Coastwalk specifically, partly because several members of Coastwalk are in the audience. But Coastwalk was the first organization that we worked with who really volunteered and said, hey, what can we do to help you in Mendocino County, where we were really having kind of a hard time because the county didn't have a park district and didn't really have the local government infrastructure to accept the OTDs and do anything with them. So we partnered with the land trusts, and as I said, Coastwalk came in and accepted, I don't know, 40 or 60 OTDs a few years ago, and then the American Land Conservancy came in and said, well, we'd like to help too, and Coastwalk got involved with the Coastal Trail, and so the American Land Conservancy took a lot of the easements in transfer from Coastwalk, and now we're on the third tier of that process, and the Mendocino Land Trust is looking to accept OTDs, or actually now the easements technically, from the American Land Conservancy and actually get them opened up. So just to let you know that it's, you know, it's a multi-step process, and now we're getting real close to actually getting some of these easements developed and so that people can walk out on them. And a couple of the board members were on the tour in Mendocino last May and went out on the trail at Belinda Point, which was a really good example of an OTD that's been opened. So having said all that, now I'd like to recommend a grant of $240,000 to the Mendocino Land Trust to obtain the surveys, to complete the engineering and feasibility studies, and to undertake other site design tasks as needed for the public use of 15 coastal access easements, and also to fund ongoing operation and management of 3 coastal access ways that the Land Trust is already managing for public use. What else can I tell you? The Well, surveys are one of the first steps that are really key. It's essential to identify the boundaries of the public access easements. In many cases, it's important also to have biological and archaeological surveys done so that when the trails are planned, we know that we're not building over archaeological sites or disturbing any endangered species, plants, or animals. So that's a large chunk of the work for each of these 15 easements. The property boundaries will be surveyed, and additional surveys will be done as needed. Additionally, on the Belinda Point easement, that trail goes out to the edge of the bluff and along the bluff, and a connection down to the Pocket Beach is needed, so we'll be looking at an engineering feasibility study of putting in that stairway. Mendocino Land Trust has really good relations with landowners, has a lot of expertise in working with landowners on acquisitions, and a lot of their staff efforts will be in contacting landowners, talking with them about the easements on their properties and the specific design ideas for making the easements open to the public. So there's a lot of public relations work that goes along with these projects as well. So we're going to take on the second phase of work, and then we'll be coming back for capital funding probably in another year or two to actually fund the physical improvements to get more of these easements opened up. Just by way of background on Mendocino Land Trust, it is an organization which already holds and manages over 1,500 acres in easements and fee interests to preserve and protect open space and agricultural and natural areas and public access. I would like to introduce James Bernard, who's the executive director of the Mendocino Land Trust. He's come here today to make some remarks to the board, and we're both available to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Bosco, members. I'm James Bernard. I'm the executive director of the Mendocino Land Trust. We've been involved in over 9,000 acres of conservation work in Mendocino County. The organization has existed since 1976. In 1998, the Land Trust started work on offers to dedicate. We've accepted and opened three different locations. Belinda Point is the most recent, as Joan mentioned. It's a beautiful half-mile trail. It's a lateral and a vertical. My last trip out there a few days ago on a monitoring visit, which we do on a weekly basis, was 26 folks, a high number for a weekday. Abalone divers, people from the local campground. What this really says is OTDs in our area are about economic development for future generations, and that's the way we look at this. We're working on behalf of the people of California, but we're also working on behalf of the local economy. Cantus Cove is the Isla Vista accessways and the issues surrounding them. And we really intend to work with other land trusts in Mendocino County. There are 13 land conservation organizations in Mendocino County, five of which have actually worked on coastal access work: the Redwood Coast Land Conservancy, the Moat Creek Management Agency, the Coastal Land Trust. Roxanne Warren is here today from Coastal Land Trust, the Westport Village Society, and the Casper Community, all of which you have funded at various points in time. So we really look forward to this work. Allegedly, we hold more and have opened more OTDs with three than any other land trust in the state. And we want to continue that work. This is very popular in Mendocino County and very essential. The last thing I want to mention just as a reminder is actually in 1999, you funded our acquisition of a quintessential piece of California coast. When you come up Highway 1 or when you come into the Mendocino coast on Route 128, you hit Navarro Point. You come up around, heading north, and hit the sweep of a beautiful headland, and I'm passing around a postcard of it in bloom. By 2001, you'd funded a management plan for the property, and we have finally completed a couple of days ago parking lot with an access road, an 8-car parking lot. The hydro seating is in. The trail loops now are cut in. All of our signs are in. A bike rack is in. We're going to have an opening ceremony on October the 8th from 1 to 3 in the afternoon. We'd like to invite all of you to come out. The Beauvais family, Deborah Beauvais's memorial bench, has finally landed on Navarro Point. It's in a location where not only can you see a seal haul out below, but you can also see Point Cabrillo and Point Arena when they're visible on a clear day. It's a magnificent location, we'd love you to help us put the trails in. We've mowed and cut, but haven't gone down into the tread and don't want to because of the spectacular botanical resources. It's a remnant coastal prairie. It's absolutely extraordinary. I have not gone out on that site and not seen raptors of various sorts. It's a wonderful place, and we'd like you to share in its opening. Any questions you might have on coastal access, I'd be happy to handle.
Does anyone have any questions? Mr. Bernard, let me ask you this. From what I understand, there's 15 of these sites that you'll be inheriting, and then for the 240,000, what would we expect to have done with those 15? Would you actually have engineered access, or... I mean, what exactly is it that your group will do?
What's proposed by your staff is a first phase, which would be survey work, archaeological surveys, botanical surveys, and physical surveys on the ground, and a lot of landowner outreach, which is essentially teeing it up for the next phase, which would be, as your staff mentions, capital improvements. With one exception, at Belinda Point, we're ready to do a feasibility study for the staircase and then actually put the staircase in down to the pocket beach. So this would be a program working in phases. Coastal access work requires a lot of time and a lot of patience. Our staff has looked at the 83 easements held by the American Land Conservancy and strategically selected 15 where we believe we can make fairly rapid progress. And stringing some of these together, for instance, there are three laterals in the Little River area that may be able to be put together into to get people off of Highway 1 where the coastal trail is now and onto laterals alongside Highway 1 where you'd be able to have a bikeway or a trail path. We're playing for the long term, but we're also playing for to do this systematically and report back to you periodically on what we've been able to achieve.
I just am a little frustrated with, and this isn't directed to you basically, but you know, we're spending a lot of money on studying things, and I mean, I wonder, wouldn't we be better off taking like 3 or 4 of these sites for 240,000 and actually totally engineer it? Just say, okay, on these 4 sites for 240,000, we're going to come up with our plans, our engineering design, and 1 year come back to the Conservancy for the money to build them. It seems like taking 15 and just sort of this amorphous studying, you know, I don't know what we
forward on a particular cluster of OTDs in a particular area, say Little River or Albion. We would love to move forward on this. And in fact, proposed in an earlier budget proposal with working with your staff that we do so in some cases where we feel that we can move more quickly. Perhaps there would be an opportunity within this funding source to be flexible if we are able to make faster progress. That's all I can tell you.
Add something. What we're really doing is site plans. You have to survey the easements and develop site plans. It's part of the CEQA process. We're not allowed to move forward and build something until we know exactly what it is we want to build so that we can do the proper CEQA analysis. So essentially, for each of these easements, we're figuring out exactly what improvements we want to have done. We'll be doing site plans, which will go through plan review at the county level. Then the land trust can obtain permits. We can satisfy CEQA requirements, and then we do cost estimates for the physical improvements. Then at that point, we come back to the board and ask for the capital outlay funding for those physical improvements, and we satisfy the CEQA requirements at that time. We picked these 15 because we thought there was some synergy, I suppose, of some of the easements being linked together so that when the improvements are done, they can all be, like the ones that are contiguous along the highway, can be paved and surfaced at the same time. And then we have the uncertainty of just exactly how the landowners will respond. So hopefully out of those 15, we'll get some that we can move forward on more quickly and just kind of get a group in the hopper that we can be working with. I hope that answers your question.
Well, actually, it does in a way. So what you're saying is for $240,000, in a certain period of time, I don't know what that is, but we will have site plans for 15 access points that will include all of the CEQA requirements and I'm permits. Saying engineering, maybe that's...
In some cases, yes.
Where all right, that's so made. You'll know how you want, you'll dealt with the landowners, you'll know how you're going to get down to the ocean or what, or the beach or whatever it happens to be.
Right.
So we'll have something firm in our hands to go on from that point on.
Yes.
And what period of time would that be?
Well, I'm thinking about 18 to 24 months.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
I had a question just about the other 68 OTDs. Does this action have any consequence for them, or I want to make sure we take good care of them as well?
Right. Well, right now they're essentially being land banked by the American Land Conservancy. That is, they've been accepted, so there's no danger of their expiration any longer. We've worked with the Mendocino Land Trust to go through those 83. We've prioritized them and identified these 15 as the top priority ones because they're like part of the coastal trail alignment or they're visitor destination points. And, you know, there's already a proven utility to these easements. So we've kind of taken what we think is the first chunk that the land trust can handle that we can move forward on. And the expectation is that over time, the Mendocino Land Trust will really love dealing with these OTDs and will continue and will take those other 83 in increments. American Land Conservancy is based in San Francisco. It, like us, doesn't really want to hold on to easements and improve them. So they came in at a really critical time and provided us great assistance by doing the necessary research and paperwork to accept the easements. But they really aren't interested in going to this next step, which is to do the improvements and open up and manage the easements. They're just not suited for that, as we are not really suited for that. That's why the Mendocino Land Trust is the perfect partner, because they do manage land and are right there locally to deal with issues as they arise. So that's our expectation, and I believe that James can speak to that as well. The Land Trust Board formally approved the acceptance of 15 easements just a couple of weeks ago, but we are really anticipating that they will take on the other 83.
The other 68.
Or 60.
Are all those in Mendocino County?
Yes.
Wow.
That's yes. And the intention is definitely to take on the other 68, but moving stepwise and seeing how well we do and at what pace. My board has a little bit of trepidation about taking 83 at one time. We're trying to bite off what we can chew and what we have expertise to do and where it makes sense. There is positive synergy in and malice aforethought in what we're trying to do here.
Well, if I could, Chair, just a comment, noting that trepidation, just like
is your light
pushing it. It doesn't have a light. But wanted to express appreciation for your board's willingness to take these on, because OTDs is a
study work where you've got a fairly well-defined project and you need to study it to figure out how to do it, to sort of the other end of the spectrum where you've got this sort of general piece of land and you're not sure what to do with it, and so you explore a lot of different options. And there are different ways that these get funded. Some of them are funded out of bond funds. Some of them, like this project, I think is out of the Coastal Access Account. And some of those sources of funding are more appropriate for certain kinds of studies than they are for others. Bond funds, for example, really ought to be used under the law only for those fairly specific projects, not so much for general planning kinds of projects, though it's not a black and white area. There's a lot of shades of gray in it. But, you know, my concern always about going down certain paths with an ends justifies the means approach to doing important work tends to result in us losing our focus and losing our sense of where we're going. Not to suggest that we've done that here, but I think we run the risk of doing it if we as a board don't have a clear sense of, in the study realm, what should we be funding, what shouldn't we be funding, and what are the appropriate sources to fund those kinds of studies with. So for the sake of our own discussions in the future on planning money, if we could have a deliberative discussion about that topic, I think it would be helpful. I'd like to suggest that we do that.
I think that's a very good suggestion. And the Mendocino Land Trust is an exemplary organization, and I hope you don't feel that our discussion is not geared toward you, because the work you're doing clearly has to be done. It's just an observation that over the years I'm starting to think that the study element is tipping the scales and the doing element is losing out to it. And it almost becomes a kind of a unstoppable juggernaut that, you know, everyone now expects millions of dollars to be spent in studying before anything can be done. And, you know, we have to keep a focus on actually getting the thing built eventually.
Well, as you pointed out, there is a really good nexus here, because this is very specific to particular sites.
That's good.
When we understand through a survey where the envelope is to place a trail, where the lateral is or where the vertical is, then we can go ahead and do the archaeological survey and the botanical survey. So this is very methodical, very unpretty, stepwise work that yields pretty results ultimately. But it requires a lot of patience. But this is very site-specific, as Joan pointed out, to get to the point where we get the proper permits in place to do the actual physical improvements on the ground. And what holds us back sometimes is time of the year. Botanical surveys are appropriate at certain times of the year and not others. Archaeological surveys in wet weather can be a real mess. Trail building also at various times of the year is appropriate or not. So a lot of our scheduling has to be very pragmatic and very site-specific. So there's a tie in this particular case between coastal access funding and particular sites. That would be different than some of the other planning you were talking about for Sonoma Creek.
Thank you. Any other questions? Oh, okay, yes.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and the board. I'm Rixanne Warren. I'm one of the directors of the Coastal Land Trust, also in Mendocino County. And I'd like to take this opportunity to support the staff recommendation and the Mendocino Land Trust application today, primarily because we are a smaller land trust within the same area. And we held one of these access easements, but we're not able to open it simply because our volunteer base wasn't strong enough to get the work done. And so we see that this is a really good effort in our county to bring together the accessways that are ready to be opened up or very close, and have a staff person pursuing those in a way that we weren't able to do. So we have given over our accessway to the Mendocino Land Trust to put into this package that we feel is much more progressive than trying to open up individual ones with limited staff. So we strongly support this.
How many people are in the Coastal Land Trust?
Our mailing list is probably about 150, but we only have about 10 active.
And where are you headquartered?
In Albion, south of Mendocino by 10 miles.
Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Class, do you want to move that we approve this project? And Mr. Hernandez, second?
Please.
All right. All those in favor of approving project number 9, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. And that project is approved. Sorry for giving you such a workout today, but at least you have $240,000 to show for it.
Also to exchange information about new planning techniques and restoration work. So we're looking forward to this conference and to working with the Resources Agency and the Ocean Council. The your recommendation is conditioned on the Ocean Council later on this month also finding that this is a high priority project. The funding source for this is the Environmental License Plate Fund, a specific appropriation for the Ocean Protection Council, or actually it's an appropriation to the Conservancy, but it's for the work of the Ocean Protection Council. And so we do think this is an appropriate use of those funds, and it was actually called for in our budget proposal.
Are there any questions? Is this $150,000 part of the $5 million?
That's my question.
No, it's actually, it's not.
It isn't. The Coastal Conservancy authorized up to $5 million of existing bond money that had been appropriated to us for projects that the Ocean Protection Council is interested in pursuing. Since that time, two additional pots of money, if you will, have materialized for the work of the Ocean Protection Council. $1.2 million of environmental license plate funds were appropriated to the Coastal Conservancy for the work to support the work of the Ocean Protection Council, and out of that money, for instance, we will be hiring a full-time Conservancy project development analyst to position to be on staff and to support the things that we're doing with the council. And thanks largely to the ever-increasing price of oil, $10 million of Tidelands oil money appropriated to the Conservancy in the previous year's budget has materialized for the work of the Ocean Protection Council. This project would be funded out of the environmental license plate funds.
So it would come from that $1.2 million that was in the budget?
That's correct.
Because there's such competition for the and such high demand. I guess, certainly supportive of the conference and stuff, but I just want to kind of echo this theme that, you know, using funds for conferences and studies, and I would hope to see that this is going to really be just, launching point for actually getting some projects before us. So,
thank you.
Are there any other questions? All right.
I move approval.
Okay. It's been moved and approved and seconded that we approve item number 10. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. And that item is approved.
Thank you.
Thank you, Neil. Okay, now we have the consent calendar. These are items below $200,000 that continue previously authorized projects, and they're items that there's no known opposition to. Does anyone have any opposition to them? All right.
Move the consent.
Okay, Mr. Hernandez moves, and Mr. Class seconds that we...
Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
What policy is on what gets moved to consent? I didn't know if it was dollar amount, but one of them is $3 million,
right,
which seems like a lot of money. How do you determine what to move to consent?
Under a delegation of authority passed by the Conservancy Board and modified from time to time, the criteria for placing an item on consent is it's either less than $200,000 or is a continuation of a previously approved Conservancy project. So the $3 million for the San Francisco Bay Salt Pond Restoration Project is on the consent calendar because it was it's a continuation of a previously approved project. And the third criteria is that there's no known public opposition, obviously.
It's very easy to get anything taken off the consent calendar, too.
All you have to do is ask.
Right. Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent calendar. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. And that is approved. Okay, now we're going to have our executive officer's report. Sam?
Thank you, Chairman Bosco. I have a number of short items or comments for you, and then we have a couple of lengthier reports. At the next conservancy meeting, we will bring you a schedule of meetings to approve for the next calendar year. I emailed out a draft schedule earlier. I haven't heard anything back. I'll email it again to all of you tomorrow when I get back. The staffing it both in terms of actually making sure that the meetings happen so that Carmen, for instance, is now performing the same function for the council that she is performing for these meetings in terms of putting the agendas together. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has generously provided us with a two-year detail, they're called in the federal government, basically a staff person from NOAA who has been loaned to us to work in our office on ocean issues. Her name's Rebecca Pollack. It is actually spelled just like the fish. And I was hoping to introduce her to you at this meeting, but we've sent her off on a marine debris to go to a marine debris conference that the Coastal Commission organized. I expect that she'll be here at the October meeting. We're also going to use some of the ELPF money to hire a full-time conservancy project person to work on ocean projects, and I'm leaning in the direction of creating a what would be a fifth region within the conservancy, a marine region or an ocean region, to handle the increasing ocean-related workload that we have, and I'll keep you posted on what we do there. You'll notice that this meeting is being filmed. You will be broadcast on the San Luis Obispo public access channel. These are folks from AGP Video, which is based in San Luis Obispo. I'm familiar with them because they, ever since the Channel Island Marine Sanctuary vote, were filming coastal, Fish and Game Commission meetings. And in fact, the last time I was here in San Luis Obispo, I discovered that I actually had a fan base of people who had watched me on the commission meetings. So we'll try to make sure that you look good for television. The Coastal Commission is
have to hire a makeup
makeup crew and make sure the lighting is just so. The Coastal Commission, I think, is working on a contract with these folks to have their meetings televised. They have the ability to do live web streaming, and it also means that you get a video archive of the public meeting that you can then put up on your website and let people look at. And we're thinking of doing the same thing for the Ocean Protection Council. The last quick item is to invite our Deputy Executive Officer Neil Fishman to come up and give you a brief legislative report.
Morning again, Mr. Chair, members. I'm going to talk just about three bills that are either on the governor's desk or expected there shortly that have direct impact on the conservancy. The first is AB 1524 by Assemblyman Laird, and this bill is very similar to, I can't remember the number now, a Polanco bill of several years ago that required that the Conservancy accept all expiring offers to dedicate public access easements within 90 days of their expiration date. It also said that acceptance of those easements was not subject to the property acquisition law. We didn't need to go to General Services Public Works Board to accept those sorts of easements. The Laird bill would expand that to open space easements as well. Sitting on the governor's desk, we think that this would not have a great impact on the conservancy or our fiscal situation. So we're looking at that bill now. Another bill that's just arrived on the governor's desk is AB 1296, by Assemblywoman Hancock, and this would create the San Francisco Bay Area Water Trail. And the idea here is to link human-powered boats by campgrounds and areas to park vehicles and such, and that this would become a new tourist attraction around the Bay Area, and it would be planned in a way that would be protective of wildlife and security issues. There's a homeland security issue and not getting close to oil refineries and things like that. So we think this actually could become a tourist attraction, even a commercial attraction, with tour operators bringing people on kayak tours around the bay, overnight accommodations, various places. BCDC is designated as the agency to actually develop the plan. We're to assist in that development. And once the plan is done, we're to take a look at it and see whether it should be included in our strategic plan and perhaps implement various aspects of the trail, such as campgrounds or parking areas. And then the third bill, which I do not believe is out of the...
If money goes to the Coastal Conservancy, it can be used countywide in these coastal counties. And I think that it's become clear to me that that's some kind of public education that the Coastal Conservancy could conduct, I think, that would be very useful to remind the public or educate the public that Coastal Conservancy funds are not restricted to the coastal zone and that inland areas also benefit from Coastal Conservancy projects. I think that's an important public education thing, that information that I think will benefit Coastal Conservancy projects in the future, to educate both the legislature and the public about that.
Thank you. Yes, Reed?
If I could just make a comment about 1524 as well. That bill, we had hoped for it to be somewhat broader and that at some point could get to the bigger issue of OTD access and provide more funding and so forth. During the budget negotiations, we actually incorporated into the Senate and Assembly versions of the budget some better funding both to the Commission and to the Conservancy. Unfortunately, we're not able to get that past the Governor's office, but we hope that this bill, 1524, would be a small first step, and that next year we can maybe try to come back at this again. Again, we do see the issue of OTD, OTD acceptance, and management and opening of those easements very important to the California coast, and want to continue working on that issue. Thank you.
Neil, could I ask about the vehicle license fee? Would this be voted on by the people in each county? Or?
No, it would not. It would be the Board of Supervisors would have the option to authorize this fee.
And then, it would be imposed on any vehicles licensed in
that county, right? And actually, the Board of Supervisors would have to first authorize the Conservancy to impose the fee, and then it would be up to the Conservancy to actually do it. So it's not an automatic. If the Board of Supervisors said, first of all, you need five counties to approve it. If five counties approve it, then any of those counties could have the fee imposed. Any county that did not approve it could not have the fee imposed. Then it would be up to the Conservancy to determine whether or not it wanted to impose the fee. And then all funds would have to be used on projects that had a nexus to the impacts of automobiles. So there would be a whole new set of findings that would have to happen for each of these projects that were brought to the board.
Does this have the support of the governor's office?
I don't think so. We have not seen a support.
And that has passed already, or
no? I think it's I believe it was out of the assembly yesterday, or scheduled to be out. And I think it probably comes back for a concurrence vote. So we're just keeping an eye out on that bill.
Sounds like there's going to be a lot of buffers between. The buck will stop here, I guess.
If it passes, it will stop.
Supervisors will be able to say, we didn't do it.
Well, and then, of course, if they do it, then you'll have an excuse to raise to do the fee if you want to, because you will have the Board of Supervisors to tell you that that's what they want.
Okay. Well, great.
Thank you, Neil. That's the concludes the short items. We have, from time to time, briefed you on the progress we have made towards accepting and opening offers to dedicate, and I realize that it was time to do that again at this board meeting. In addition, we expect to have a number of items involving the Coastal Trail to come before you in the next 6 months. So I thought it would be a good idea to do an OTD, an access OTD update, and tie that into a report on what's happening with the Coastal Trail. So we'll have Joan start off by reporting on offers to dedicate.
Would you indulge me in a moment on something that's not OTD related but is conservancy related, just so you don't all think that that's the only thing I do? I want to let the rest of the board members know the women on the board are too new to remember this project, but those of you on the right-hand side will remember the Union Point Park project that I first brought to the board in about 1998. And I'm sorry the chairman stepped out for a moment, but we funded a lot of planning on that project, and now it's been constructed. The grand opening for Union Point Park on the Oakland waterfront is Saturday, September 10th. It's beautiful. I would welcome all of you to come if you can, and if you can't make it on Saturday, then try to come by the next time you're in Oakland and see what we really helped to achieve. It's right on the Bay Trail. And it's just this all end. what will we accomplish, et cetera. So when we started in, I think it was 1995, maybe, when the Coastal Commission finally got their OTD records computerized, which before that they'd been in like a shoebox file or something, so nobody knew exactly how many they were. And when they got the database computerized, then we knew, you know, the total number of OTDs we were dealing with, exactly where they were, et cetera, et cetera. So we started out with about 1,487 OTDs on those books. And now we have accepted, of that original number, there are only 367 left to be accepted. So I think we're making great gains. It's not a static situation, however. The Coastal Commission does continue to require OTDs in those circumstances where they fit the nexus and proportionality tests. So it's typically when seawalls are approved, which are happening, I think, less frequently. But nevertheless, every so often, I get a list of 4, 6, 8 OTDs that the Coastal Commission has required in their permit process, you know, over the past 6 months or something. So they still kind of trickle in, and they still have the 21-year expiration date typically. So we kind of add those on, but frankly, we're not as worried about those as we are about the ones that are on the existing database, because obviously we've got time to deal with those, and we're focusing more pragmatically on the ones that are due to expire, so that none of them will expire. Let's see, the other point I wanted to make is just with regard to OTDs, it's important to remember that 90% of the OTDs that are on the books are laterals. That is, they run along the shoreline or they run along a bluff top. And really about 90% of the laterals are laterals on the shoreline, sandy, rocky, or otherwise. Only about 10% of the laterals are up on a bluff top. So only 10% of all the OTDs are the so-called vertical OTDs, which are the ones that go from the public road to the beach. And those are, by and large, the most controversial and the most difficult to open. The laterals are often not that close to the residential property, or they've been used by the public, or they're so remote that they... you know, it's really unclear when they will ever be reached by the public. So they just tend to be not quite so controversial as the verticals. But those 10% of verticals that are controversial take up, you know, a disproportionate amount of time. Let's see. So of the easements that are that have been accepted, the OTDs have been accepted, they're now easements. You see on that little pie chart kind of who holds what. The Conservancy, as part of the state, holds 126 easements. State Lands Commission is the champion. They hold 200, and they just had a really nice celebration down in Los Angeles when the State Lands Commission voted to accept the 200th OTD, which is on Carbon Beach, just a few doors down from David Geffen's place. So that was something to celebrate. And they also get some kudos for being clever in that they don't manage their OTDs. They just get to accept them, and then because they're in the tide zone area, they just hold on to them as part of their jurisdiction. State Parks comes along kind of behind with only 22, but they accept OTDs that are immediately adjacent to their properties. They don't take OTDs that are located elsewhere. So when there's an OTD that's right next to an existing park or an expansion, then they want those. And we've made a list with all the OTDs that State Parks would like, and we have this arrangement whereby we accept them, do the paperwork, and then we transfer those easements to them later. So it just makes things easier. It's an easier process to follow. Let's see. So local governments really have managed to fulfill most of their obligation in taking on OTDs. I mean, I think originally the idea was that local governments would take basically all of them, and that clearly hasn't turned out to be the case. But proportionally, they hold the most. Numerically, it's 556 currently OTDs that are held by local governments. And that includes, you know, park districts, harbor districts, cities and counties. And then nonprofits fill in the gap and currently hold 138. So what we want to do, really, over time, is to transfer the easements that we hold to appropriate local entities where we can. You know, the OTDs sometimes are written in a peculiar way, and they say some of them can only be accepted by a state agency, or can't be accepted by a local nonprofit, things like that. So we have to read these very carefully and understand the circumstances around the requirements for the OTD and make sure that we abide by those. But we would like to transfer the ones that we hold. And some of them, I think probably some of the most problematic ones that we hold are in the Malibu area, where the Conservancy was accepting OTDs back in the early 80s. And we've been trying, you know, quite honestly, sort of in fits and starts to get those easements opened. And usually what stops us is the price tag, either that or lawsuits, which are a setback, obviously. But, for example, the Chiat Wildman easement, which the Conservancy accepted in the 80s and really looked at very closely in the mid-90s, trying to find a way to get this easement open that's across a landscaped yard on weekends. So, and that's without any signs being up, which is the next thing we're working on that particular one. We hold another easement, just to give you one more example of some of the difficulties. The Conservancy holds an easement on Malibu Road. It was a fee title lot. Brenda Buxton was my predecessor on that project, been trying to work to get that one opened since probably the early 90s, and then I took it over, and we designed this beautiful stairway and thought we could get this thing built, and went to General Services, who is our partner for these kinds of projects, and they came back with a price tag three times what we thought it would be, at which point we decided that was really way too expensive to justify, and now we literally are back to the drawing board to see if we can figure out another way to construct some kind of stairway down this very steep bluff so that people can get access to the shoreline, which happens to be a real nice put-in point for kayaks. And we see people putting kayaks over the cyclone fence that's been erected on the site. So, we'll find a way, but it's difficult, and sometimes you kind of have to set these things aside and work on something that's going to progress, and then we come back. So those are things that are in the mix, and those are things we'd really like to transfer to somebody else, but can't get anybody to take for us until the city of Malibu has a major change of heart. Let's see. But then, we do have these other nice success stories where we partner successfully with the locals, like with the Mendocino Land Trust. They've got those accessways open, very heavily used. And we just want to continue, in that vein. And we really, the local governments have really been coming forward. There are several many jurisdictions that have accepted all of their OTDs. San Luis Obispo County has accepted all of theirs. Santa Barbara County has accepted virtually all of their OTDs. Many counties. The ones that are, sort of outstanding, Humboldt County, they have some legitimate arguments and concerns about why they need to accept OTDs that are located on rocky coastlines that aren't accessible by anyone. We've accepted those to hold them until such time as they can be transferred, or, it frankly doesn't really matter that much because there's no maintenance required. And we continue to work with the other local jurisdictions that have concerns. Monterey County, if anybody has friends in Monterey County that they could put in a good word for us, we've been trying to get Monterey County to step up to the plate and accept their OTDs, and just really have not had much luck. So, as they come up with their expiration dates, we accept them and kind of grumble that we're going to transfer them, but haven't really had the opportunity to do that yet. But that's the pattern or the process that we're using. Just do a lot of talking with the local governments, various communities like Carlsbad and other communities in North San Diego are accepting all of their OTDs. Encinitas, I think, is on track. We've got a few holdouts. Newport Beach, we're working with them. Huntington Beach still is reluctant to accept some of theirs. So anyway, you get the idea. It's an ongoing dialogue. But we're really getting down to basically the end, although, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to continue to have this trickle of OTDs coming in as the Commission continues to require them. And, our role in overseeing those isn't going to end, so it will be an ongoing thing. But we don't have, these huge spikes of OTDs which we had on the previous charts, with the bars showing the huge numbers of OTDs spiking around 2004, 5, 6, with hundreds of them coming due. We've been able to deal with those. And often, when we start talking with the local government, we say, hey, you've got one that's coming up for expiration, but why don't we take a look at all the ones? And they say, yeah, we'll go ahead, we'll accept all of them, even though they may not be expiring for 10 more years. If they're going to open up the issue, then they oftentimes decide to sort of delve right in and deal with all of them. So we've been able to make some big leaps in those cases.
Joan, if I could just add in one comment. The Conservancy Board approved a couple of years ago now a policy that when local governments came to us looking for funding for access, coastal access projects, we would require that they deal with the OTDs within their jurisdiction, and this has been an extremely useful tool for your staff. There have been a number of instances where we've been able to tell people, if you want us to repair your pier, we need you to take on these OTDs. So that policy has played out pretty well from a staff perspective.
Right. One other thing, is there any questions? I tried to give you an overview, but I'm certainly happy to answer any other specific questions that you might have.
Are there any questions?
Okay.
No questions.
Thank you.
Sure. Sounds like probably the people that offer to dedicate don't want to do it, and the people that are supposed to receive them don't want to have them.
Except for Mendocino. Another county, by the way, that's been a pleasure to work with has been Orange County. In marked contrast to their neighbors to the north, they've been pretty easy to work with, and they've been pretty generous in accepting things. Now we'll sort of turn from how you get to the beach to what you do when you're there, and Steve will give us a report on what's been happening with the Coastal Trail.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. As Sam has said, I'm here to do a report on the progress that we've made in completing the California Coastal Trail. You recall that this effort got kicked into a higher gear by the state legislature in 2001. Passage of SB 908 designated the Conservancy to take the lead in preparing a report, which we did in the course of a year, and by the end of 2002 had completed this report in conjunction with our partner agencies, Coastal Commission and State Parks, and with a considerable amount of help from our friends at Coastwalk, from whom we will be hearing. And your board then incorporated the recommendations of this document, which in a general way identifies the status of the current effort in the Coastal Trail and the number of places where additional public action will be needed in order to complete that 1,300-mile trail. So your board incorporated the completion of the trail as a primary goal into the Conservancy's strategic plan. So basically, from the beginning of 2002 is where I would like today to take us up to date on the progress that we've made through our efforts. I'll tell you then a little about a couple of major initiatives that will be coming to your board in the near term. And then finally, I will introduce our friends from Coastwalk who will be telling you. Coastwalk is, of course, a nonprofit organization, a leading advocacy group for 20 years for public use and development of the Coastal Trail. And they'll tell you about the efforts that they've been making in cooperation with the Conservancy and other public agencies. So let's start with the maps from the Coastal Trail report and the project that we have succeeded in doing over the last approximately 2.5 years through our May board meeting. We've got about 30 projects that directly implement the Coastal Trail report recommendations. And just quickly, we'll talk about these. Up in Del Norte, we've got the Crescent City Harbor. This here, I think, is an example of the kind of thing that we've been talking about, where a planning and design effort was necessary, and we did fund that as the initial step in moving toward a comprehensive trail and boardwalk design around the Crescent City Harbor. There was not agreement on where alignment should go. There were a number of private businesses that had to be dealt with, including commercial fishing and other industrial users in there, and a number of issues that had to be sorted out with the local government and private landowners before we could move to the acquisition and construction phase, which ultimately the board did fund. And these things are in process now of being completed. So I think...
Can I interrupt that?
Certainly.
What the red means versus the green?
Ah, yes. I'm sorry. These are the maps from the Coastal Trail report. And basically what the Coastal Trail report did was, for the whole state, identify those places where currently the Coastal Trail exists in an adequate form, adequate to public use, up to a reasonable standard of accessibility, and then those places where some substantial public improvement was going to be needed in order to create the Coastal Trail. And what we found, and these are represented by the green and red lines, the red lines are the areas where some substantial public action will be needed. That could be acquisition. That could be acquisition and construction, and those. It's further defined. There are a number of map notes that describe it more particularly. But basically, what we're trying to do was characterize the overall magnitude of the problem. And what we found was about half the length of the Coastal Trail existed in adequate form today under a variety of jurisdictions, state, local, federal. And for about half of its length, some substantial new investment was going to be needed. And the estimate to accomplish that in current dollars at that time was in excess of $300 million. So, we're looking at a long-term project. You've heard a lot about the problems that there are in working with landowners and so forth. And, those are the realities of things, major things that will be coming up. At the October and December meetings, we're going to be having...
Could I interrupt you one second? Is part of this trail actually on the beach, or is all of it off of the beach?
There are portions of it where, from a physical standpoint, there's really no alternative to being on the sandy beach. This is an issue that was debated a considerable amount in the development of the trail recommendations. And I think for the most part... We would like to have that trail off of the beach for accessibility reasons. If it's on the beach, obviously there are physical limitations then as to who can really use that. And so what we're looking for, wherever it's possible, is a more whole access trail as close to the shoreline as possible, but in a place where it can really...
Because I noticed in the last map in Mendocino County, where the Sinkione Wilderness mm-hmm. and up that area, really extensive, looks like progress has been made on the continuous trail, but I was wondering, is that on the beach, or is it...
Some of that trail is on the beach, and if you've walked it, you know it is quite a slog across the sand there. There's really no good alternative at present, but a considerable amount of the trail is adjacent to the beach, and again, while it's difficult, there's a lot of up and down, I think it's a superior route than walking on the beach. Some people would prefer walking on the beach, and that's fine, and you know, to the maximum extent possible, that should be available as a choice to the public. But we're trying to create a trail that would be more widely usable for people who have access problems, elderly, you know, families and so forth. And so I think for the most part we will try to create something. I think that the term that was used was a braided trail system, in which there are a variety of choices. Some choices are better for bicycles, some are better for horses, some are better for hikers. I think we need all of those things if we're going to get the public the maximum use that they deserve out here. So that's basically what the recommendation is.
But if you see green, would that indicate that someone of reasonable capability would be able to go that entire route without some impediment stopping?
It should mean that. Okay. Yes, I can't vouch for every specific. If you're going to come up with an example for me to prove that wrong,
No, I'm not. I want to prove you're right.
I think that should be the case. That was the standard that we tried to use here. The green does not simply represent that you can walk on the beach. I think for the most part, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we tried to find a route that was off the beach, and I think we used that as our standard.
Okay.
So coming up, an important element in this, of course, is enabling the public to recognize the Coastal Trail as a significant public feature and investment, and giving it both greater visibility and enabling the public to know where it is through the creation of a graphic symbol that represents the Coastal Trail, a so-called logo. We're using the term insignia. We have been working with the State Parks Department and with Coastwalk and with the Coastal Commission to create a graphic emblem that can be used on trail signs and publications, websites, and so forth, to identify the trail route and create more of a public identity. Marina Cazorla of our staff is the lead person on this, and she's been meeting with the staff members from some of the principal consumers of the new symbol. That is, again, parks, National Park Service, Forest Service, local public agencies, to develop the design program for the insignia.
It's an elementary school to do.
And we've conducted a competitive selection process for a professional design firm. At the October Conservancy meeting, you will see a selection of alternative designs that have been developed so far. And during that same period, we'll be going out to the public with, I don't want to call them focus groups, but we'll be conducting some public meetings to get reactions to those draft designs. So we're really hoping to have the Coastal Trail insignia ready for a public rollout of the signing program by next summer. And we're expecting to bring to your board a final design, a recommendation for a final design for your endorsement as early as the December meeting in order to try to meet that. But I think is a schedule that we should be pointing toward to try to have this so that we can have some kind of a public event concerning the new emblem for the Coastal Trail by next year. And I think we're excited by that, although I haven't seen any of the drafts yet. We'll see how exciting they prove to be. But And maybe the feet will ultimately win out.
I was going to ask a question about that. Okay, is that because I actually believe it was former Coastal Commissioner and Coronado City Councilwoman Lois Ewen who designed the feet, and it's certainly something that the public recognizes very well.
So I don't think that there's any likelihood that those coastal access signs will change. We can come up with a symbol for the coastal trail per se, but the system of public access I think takes in more than the coastal trail, and directing people from the highway down to points of access is something those signs have been very good at doing, I think, and so I expect that those will remain. And as for the others, we'll let the market decide.
Has any thought been given to allowing an elementary school to do this?
Again, I don't want to take up a lot of time with this morning, but we're going to have this in front of you next month and probably the month after that. We certainly had talked about bringing in an educational institution and making it a design program for them, not necessarily elementary kids. But, I think the desire would be to get a lot of public attention on this, and if that's a good way of doing it, there's no reason that we couldn't at some point, open it up if we decided that that was a good route to take. So I think that from our standpoint, we're hoping to raise the profile of the Coastal Trail in the effort to get more public financial support.
October, you will have before us some samples of an insignia developed by a committee.
Yes, and you can see where the tail is and where the horns are.
Is the whale tail an option? Thinking about the connection between funding and incentivizing purchase of that and helping fund the trail?
Again, there's no reason that we couldn't make it one if it isn't. I mean, it's a fairly well-known symbol. I mean, the design program has a lot of elements to it because we're looking at using this in a number of different media, and it needs to be adaptive to work in a lot of different signing programs. Some new signs, a lot of old signs, and part of the issue is don't create more sign clutter. There are a number of aspects to this that are going to sort of place limits on what we can do.
And maybe ask our vast television audience.
But the design is fortunately one of those things about which everyone has at least one opinion, and so we're anticipating.
I don't know how to get my microphone to work or not work. Sorry, but you remember the meeting we had in Palo Alto, I think it was, and the guy came up and wanted to pitch some ideas on the T-shirts.
He had the T-shirts. Yeah. We sent him to adopt a beach, and I believe that they did talk with him about doing it.
If we come up with a logo, it'd be great to put it on T-shirts too. Yeah. So we're just trying to connect all these dots.
I think it needs to work in a variety of different media because it'll have a lot of different purposes.
I assume he'd have to pay for that, right?
True.
We're going to ask our vast television audience to start sending in.
That's right.
Too.
Absolutely. Send them to Marina. Not to me. The second major thing that I wanted to tell you about that we're doing or that will be coming before you is a significant initiative in which we're currently involved with the Conservation Corps, California Conservation Corps, and the State Parks Department. And we expect a staff recommendation to the October Conservancy meeting that would include an interagency agreement between the three agencies, ourselves, Conservation Corps, and State Parks, purpose of which would be to establish a system-wide service agreement between State Parks and the Conservation Corps. This is sort of the arcana of state government, but the way that it currently works is that for State Parks to use the Conservation Corps, each individual unit must enter into a separate administrative agreement with the Conservation Corps. The administrative threshold then is steeper than we think it should be for a project like the Coastal Trail, and we think that has impeded the use of the Conservation Corps in state park units to build the trail in places where we believe there are a lot of opportunities for them to do that. So what we're going to do is get a system-wide service agreement between State Parks and the Conservation Corps and have each agency sort of increase their commitment to doing the Coastal Trail. We've identified a half a dozen projects suitable for core construction in state parks units, and we will be bringing to you a recommendation that the Conservancy give financial support to those initial set of projects. And what we're hoping then is to have a better institutional structure that will facilitate cooperation between the Corps and state parks, and a momentum on the part of both agencies, greater commitment to completing the Coastal Trail, because there are literally dozens of places, and these maps have identified a number of them, where the property is owned by the public, and there typically are some use trails out there, but they are simply not at a level that we would really be comfortable putting the Coastal Trail sign on. We need some improvements, and these are improvements that can be made by the very directly involved in the development of this report. And I think the things that they will be telling you about today are their work on public information. They have created a website to promote public understanding and use of the Coastal Trail. They've got some publications along that same line. They are encouraging local stewardship efforts, getting, as Rick San was mentioning, getting local groups to develop community involvement in opening and managing accessways, because, as we all know, the resources of public agencies to do these things are very limited, and this has often been an impediment to getting local governments to open these sites. If we can get more community work, more adopt a trail, that kind of thing, I think this could be very important in moving the trail development along. And Coastwalk has been working on some of those things. And then finally, they have been really the key element, and through their volunteers have provided hundreds of hours of volunteer service in the effort to map the Coastal Trail, identify the various support elements, whether it be parking or restrooms or, you know, signing or what have you, that make the trail accessible and usable by the public, and that it all feeds into the geographic database that the Coastal Commission has been developing for the purpose of the coastal access guide that it puts out to the public. So Coastwalk volunteers with the technical assistance that we have supported have been out there doing ground truthing and georeferencing of all of these elements so that we can hopefully move forward with identifying specifically where the trail should be and telling the public about what resources are available to them. I'm going to turn this over to them and let them tell you about their work. Thank you.
Sorry, this is Richard Nicholson, who's the Executive Director of Coastwalk. I think Don Nerlich and Rick Sand will also be part of the presentation.
Yeah, I'm Richard Nichols with Coastwalk. How much time do we think we have? About 20 minutes?
What time?
Well, we need about 20 minutes total, roughly.
Yeah. Okay. I think that would be fine.
Is that okay? I can cut mine off, because I want these mapping people to get to their part. But, I mean, if you want me to do my bit, I will. Otherwise.
No, go ahead. Let's plan on 20 minutes, and then shortly after that we'll adjourn.
Okay.
I think most of the members here have a 2 o'clock flight, so we just want to...
Okay, yeah, well, we want to keep it short. I just don't want to...
No, we're very anxious.
Okay, all right, great. As you can tell, the Coastal Trail Project is huge, actually. I just thought of it just today as the mother of all projects, because there's lots and lots of access projects on the coast, and... But the Coastal Trail, when you think about it, is 1,200 miles long. The West Coast Trail, by the way, is 1,800 miles long. There's talk about that, too, that takes in Washington and Oregon. But we're focused on the California Coastal Trail. We're slowly working on filling in the gaps, that's the main focus, is get these gaps filled, get this trail signed, and someday, hopefully, have a completed trail. A trail that would accept all kinds of uses in different places. There are places where there are limitations. We anticipate beach routes, bike routes, horse routes, multi-use routes, all kinds of routes. So ultimately, we see a lot of different uses out there on the 1,200-mile trail. Coastwalk's main two things are outreach, in other words, trying to get the volunteers involved in, becoming stewards of this trail, and to so we need we're
constantly trying to get new volunteer support. The other thing is the mapping and the website. So I'm going to briefly run through what the outreach part of it's been, and just a very brief overview. And I know Sam said you guys are being weaned off paper, but I don't want you to withdraw too badly, so I'm going to give you more paper if I could.
It's our newsletter and our new three-fold brochure.
So I'm just going to run through this very quickly. I think there's 12 slides. And I don't know if you know where that is, but it's Malibu. That's from Point Doom, aiming, looking towards Malibu. Next, please. That's the three things we're going to cover real quick. And just, yeah. So we've been working on this for over 20 years. It's been more like 22 years. Next. We've been taking people out on the coastal trail for and hiking on 4 to 6 day trips for all these years. And we've taken literally thousands of people out there. And we feel that we created the public awareness of the coastal trail, and by doing these projects for all these years, huge amounts of publicity. Those two events, we got probably 150 press coverages in those two events, so it was huge for us and for the coastal trail. Continued. We've got people working in 8 of the counties right now, active committees. And we've been doing the news. We've been doing the Coastal Trail newsletter as part of our regular Coastwalk newsletter. So it's folded into it. But you just got a little small version of the Coastal Trail newsletter. And we've done a number of little projects, and we're working on various projects right now, trying to get money for things or helping. For instance, getting Sonoma Coast State Beaches. Trail projects going there. We've been working them quite a bit to get that done, and a lot of other things. Next. We finally have launched a youth program. So we took a group of youth out on a coast walk for a couple of days, and these kids wanted to pick up trash, so this is 4 of them picking up trash on the coast. And we're going to expand that program next year. We're so excited about the idea of getting more young people involved. As you know, the environmental movement is an aging, gray. It's called gray hair, and we just realized that this isn't going to work. Coastwalk, for instance, is one example. Needs to get young people involved in this stuff. So, that's one of our major emphases. The numbers: 5,000 hours last year. That's for all of Coastwalk, not just the Coastal Trail project, because we do a lot of things. But we got a lot of volunteer hours last year. We had a bunch of committee meetings. We managed to get 20 sets of maps produced. You're going to hear about that. And the rest of this business is what you're going to hear about right now. So I'm going to stop, just continue. The numbers, 45, this is all website stuff. So continue on that. A 1,000 photographs is a lot of photographs, so, but it's really interesting to tour the coast that way. Keep going, please. So we're getting lots and lots of visitors on our website now, more and more. And just to actually show you that we actually get out and do it, that's actually me digging a trail project there. So I had to throw that in to show you guys that we actually do this stuff. And that's a group of people from REI that we got out to do this trail work on the GGNRA. And we want to do a lot more of this stuff. And it's all time-consuming, and it's going to take years to do all this stuff. But we want to keep going. I think that's it. We'll see. That's it. So thank you very much. The next person I'd like to introduce is... Don Nerick is on our board of directors, and he's a volunteer who has put in countless hours on this website. I can't tell you how many hours. I would say literally $100,000 worth of hours if you were to pay him to do this stuff. So that's no small thing what Don has done, and we're very proud of what he's done, and we want him to tell us about it. And then we're going to have Rick Sanwaran come on. She's our mapper. She's on our staff, and she's a professional cartographer and knows all of the electronic stuff.
Okay, Doc.
Chairman Bosco and members of the board, I really thank you for this opportunity to tell you about our Coastal Trail Project work. What I'm going to do this morning is take you on a virtual tour of our website, pretending that you can look over my shoulder as I move the mouse. This building isn't wired for internet, so that's why it's a virtual tour. I can't actually click on buttons, but I have simulated it. I want to stress, before I begin, just a few points that as background material. Our purpose is information and outreach, and particularly we want a vehicle to present to the public all the maps that we're producing. We'll have about 400 maps on the web when the project is done in a few years, and those will be 3 to 4 mile sections of the coastal trail. It turns out I have a lot of techie friends, and so we've had a lot of consultant input free as volunteers from an enormous number of sources. And when we get to the day that people will be able to walk the coast with a Bluetooth-enabled Wi-Fi computer, handheld, they'll call up our maps, and we won't have to redesign the site for that eventuality. So 2 years went into planning the site, and I think at this moment we've done it right. It's technically sophisticated, and there's a note now has contributed text to our website on how he managed to hike from Oregon to Monterey County so far. And also somebody from Patagonia who came and actually hiked contacted me. So let's see if I can get this to work. Needless to say, I hope you'll all go home and visit the site. And the URL is not what you see at the top, but it is californiacoastaltrail.info. And as an alternative to that, you can go to the Coastwalk website, and you'll find a link to this site, californiacoastaltrail.info. On our homepage, we have a lot of things to entice the visitor, but basically the site is divided into three parts. Completing the trail is really advocacy, and I'll come back and show you some of that in a moment. The hiker's guide is intended in the long term to be all kinds of recreation. It includes our mapping section, favorite hikes, and I'll come back to that. And then I'll tell you for a moment about the What's New section that so the What's New section allows us to post links to news articles as they appear periodically. And it includes, at the top, links to the 908 report that's been mentioned. And at the bottom, some interesting things that continue on the web, some public access radio programs that have been done about the California Coastal Trail and public access issues. But we really try to keep at the top current coastal access environment and trail issues prominently displayed. So we have several volunteers and a part-time staffer who follows the news and keeps these things up to date. Yes, exactly. There are live links to each of those articles. And then also from the home page, one can go to the Coastal Trail Project section. And here our trail steward, Rob Helms, a half-time Coast Walk staffer, keeps track of the various projects that we have underway. This has only been in place for the last year, and some of them have been mentioned, but here you see Coast Walk volunteers actually out building a trail with some direction from Rob, and we keep posting all the different coastal projects we're involved here with. Some of them are meetings with advocates, and some of them are actual outdoors type projects.
Do you have any link to the, what is it, californiacoastlines.org that shows the views from the aerial views to the coast?
So
you can kind of see, orient where you are?
Yeah.
From that way? Okay.
You know, as an aside, I'll mention to you that you discussed the value of the California and World Oceans Symposium, and you granted funding to it. Coast Walk attended the meeting in 2002 as its first public event, and it was an enormously valuable experience for me personally, because Ken Edelman was also at the meeting, and he's the webmaster of that. And so he and I met, and we talked about some of the problems that he has putting his maps on the site. And he had an unlimited budget, since it was his own pocket, basically, at that time at least. But the cross-fertilization at such meetings can't be underestimated. Lots of people doing environmental mapping, and it was a wonderful experience. Now, I have jumped to the completing the trail section. This is our advocacy section. It's sort of 90% mature, with the intent that in time one or another article will be replaced or another article added. But here we have some wonderful things, and I really recommend that you will find these just five or six articles here really interesting. Michael Fisher, who of course is a prior executive director, somewhat shortened article by Mark Dowie from Orion magazine on the concept of the law of the public commons and what it's doing in environmental law today. So these are, I really recommend to you these articles. And now we're going to jump to the hiker's guide section, and there's a little snafu because this is virtual. The hiker's guide section, as I said, is our vehicle to really address people who would like the recreational use of the coast, and in time we'll have a number of things here. And the main thing I'm going to tell you about is the maps, but let me skip down from that for a moment and tell you on some of the things that we're working on. We have a section here called Favorite Hikes. There are only six at the moment, and hope for more. We're trying to recruit well-known coastal writers, such as John Crist, who's an environmental writer and has written hikes along the Central Coast, from which this is taken. We're trying to recruit well-known writers to let us use their works, and we reformat them, volunteer reformat them. The map here on this page is volunteer drawn, and this photograph is volunteer taken. But this provides a resource for people to for different kinds of visits to the coast. And I can use this opportunity to mention that Wilderness Press, that does publish many coastal hiking books, has been very helpful in letting us use works from their books, of course, and in addition has provided us with now $3,000 or $4,000 worth of publisher return books that we pass on to volunteers as thank you gifts. Another one of our favorite hikes is this. Again, this hike was written for us by Elisa Mikitin, who is co-author of the Wheelchair Access Guide to L.A. and Orange County. And This is also a volunteer-drawn map and a volunteer taken photograph, and just between you and me, the subject is my grandchild. But my granddaughter lives in, my daughter lives in Oakland, so it was easy to get done. So we have these favorite hikes, and we hope to have additional ones every few months as we go along. Richard mentioned that we hiked the entire coast in 2003, and the hikers kept day by day journal and took photographs and emailed those to me each evening. And we used our website for those 122 days that summer to record and publish their hiking journal of the whole coast. And it's this journal that many of these people from around the world are hitting on when they are interested in hiking the coastal trail, because it says, you know, we hiked here today and there was no trail, or it was wonderful, you know, that kind of text. And so I'm going to jump now simply to the very last day of the hiker's guide presentation, and I see it didn't format quite right because you're supposed to see a map of day number 122, which shows them reaching the border with Mexico in San Diego, and then here at the bottom you see a set of photographs which one can click on and view as a large photo. And let's see, something went awry here. We'll try one more time. Oh, there it came out properly. This is what the formatted table looks like. So there are 108 of these maps, each showing a few miles segment of the coastal trail. And of course, for our walk that summer, Coastwalk volunteers pre-walked all these segments to make sure that when the 10 whole coast hikers came along, they would find their way. And indeed, we had volunteers leading them county by county, and that's provided some of the expertise needed for drawing up on the 908 report. And then at the bottom of this page, besides the text, there are photographs, and you can see we have clickable reference to all of these things, and one can click on how we're developing our mapping effort. One goes from the current page to a map of the California coastline. It was there a little while ago, but I tried it on a different computer, and alas, I don't quite know. There's a clickable map of the California coastline normally here, and and with each of the coastal counties in clickable tiny type, and one clicks on a coastal county to go to a county of their choice. There's also a pull-down menu of coastal counties here for the visually impaired who wouldn't be able to see the fine type on the map. And I'm just going to pick for you, as if we clicked on Sonoma County, the county map, and let's hope this comes up. There we go. So this is, Rick-Sanne will tell you about the preparation of these maps momentarily, but this is our Sonoma County map, and I'm sorry, I wound up clicking through. This is our Sonoma County map, and one can use the previous and next buttons to click further on. And you can see that on each of these pages, there's contact us about this point, and you'll see that on all of our map pages. When a visitor to the page clicks on that, a email form opens with a cross-reference in the title to the specific map. So if somebody wants to write us about one of the 400 maps and say they want to volunteer or there's a mistake there, we will know by cross-reference exactly what map they're talking about. Because we think that there will be 1,000 maps when we are all done, dealing with inland access, access points and so forth. So here is Sonoma County broken into roughly 3-mile segments. I think there's 14 of them. All of them are clickable. I'm showing this is because we're a little further along in Sonoma than the other counties, and so we'll pretend we clicked on the Bodega Bay link, and here's our Bodega Bay sectional map, and each of the blue icons is clickable, and what these blue icons represent is a Coastal Commission listed public access points. There are about 1,000 public access listed public access points by the Commission, and we've taken as our initial project to go out and map all of those 1,000. And we're just perhaps at the 15 or 20% point, but we have volunteers out in 8 counties at the moment trying to finish it up. And then, having completed that, we'll turn to doing the whole coastal trail. But it's good training ground, and we need to raise the volunteers and test out the system on something that's limited. And so now let's pretend that we're interested in the Bodega Marine Laboratory. We click on that icon to see what the information pop-up is. And so each one of these yields a pop-up window. And the information that's provided here is features of the points, photographs taken by our volunteers, and again, they pop open into a larger photo. And then these are called UTM coordinates, northings and eastings, and those are parallel to latitude and longitude measurements, but they are part of the official state system for locational coordinates. And if you happen to be a hiker and have one of those neat little GPS units, you can set this in your car or on your handheld GPS and go directly to these sites. So in that sense, it's helpful. And then finally, I want to mention that we use the notes to provide valuable information that the public might not have at hand otherwise. So the Marine Biological Lab is open from 2 to 4 only on Fridays. And I'll just show you one more. We've started using some of these points for coastwalk projects. So here, this point is a coastwalk project. In real life, but not on this simulation, yes, I'm sorry, on this simulation even, if you roll over these icons, it'll tell you what is the exact point in question, Salmon Creek, Bodega. And then if you choose a coastwalk project to click on, then we can create a custom or I hope we can create custom pop-ups. Here again is a project in which we're working with Boy Scout Troop 32 from Sonoma County doing trail construction in Duran Park. And then you can close that window. So To return to the home page, there are other access things and many things still planned for this page. Links to Coastwalk's home page and our favorite hikes, as I mentioned and showed you here. And there are acknowledgments of all the volunteers, or many of the volunteers, who have participated. And so this list of volunteer goes back to our beginnings when we were part of the working group collaborating on the 908 report, and then we have a Coastwalk Steering Committee, largely volunteers with ad hoc members from CoastWalk employees that guide the grant expenditures, basically. And my wife, Susanna, who is here today, is the chair of that, and others are on that, the website committee, and then finally the mapping volunteers. And special thanks, acknowledgement is made, actually, to the Conservancy at the top, actually, of the page for its grant support of our project. So that's the acknowledgement. So finally, in closing, I hope you'll have a chance to, at your leisure, to explore this. I think you'll find interesting things to read. I forgot to mention a very valuable thing here is the related links page, which has dozens of state agencies that have particular relevance to the coastal environment listed there. By one click, you can go to every coastal state park, a resource that not many people know about, but is really wonderful if you want to see every coastal state park and plan your summer vacation. Well, thank you very much for your time. I'm going to turn it over to Rick Sanwayren, our cartographer, and she'll tell you about the preparation of these maps.
Thank you, Don.
Yeah, I can go through mine really fast. I'm Roxanne Warren. I'm a cartographer by profession, and I'm working with CoastWalk right now to develop the maps and to develop the methodology for volunteers to be able to put in data into the project so that we can multiply our effect by thousands of points by having individuals who are familiar with the trail go to the sites and take them with GPS. This is, I'll start, and I have to explain that Don and I live at opposite ends of the state, and we don't get to collaborate quite as closely as we'd like, so I have some slides that will overlap, and I'll move through those really quickly. In Mendocino County, this is our trail steward, Rob Helms, taking the first GPS points. Next. When we send out our volunteers, we equip them through your largesse with a GPS unit, a camera, and a paper form where they take down data, a specific data that relates exactly to the State Coastal Conservancy's data and the Coastal Commission's data. So all these three groups are working on exactly the same forms and data. Next. When we start with a map that I've developed through our GIS system, which is ArcView, and give them a map of the area and the trail as it's already known, with the points on it that the Coastal Commission has already outlined. Next. Here's one of our volunteers taking a GPS reading. They go to the site, they orient themselves with the map, take the reading so we get an exact reading of where the entry point is off of the highway, also where a visitor center would be or where a trail to the ocean would be. Next. They fill out their paper form, then they come back to their computer and go to our website. This is the back side of the website. It's not a public site, but on the back side, they can fill in exactly the same data, and when they get this filled in with next, please. With the all the indications of what facilities are there, they send me an email, and I go in the next day and look at it and make sure that it looks right, there aren't any glaring errors, and then I'll post it. Next, please. Then they show up as goes right down to the beach, and this way we'll have not only the point, the location of exactly where that is, but also a record of what it looks like. So 5 years from now, when a local group finally gets around to saying, well, we want to open this as a formal trail, we'll have a record of how it was and how it went through some steps. Next, please. We're also documenting sites that are currently formalized and have their signage and have their improvements so that the CoastWalk will be able to direct people to these sites by GPS or by route numbers. We're also taking highway routes and the mileage marker. So we can say this is on Highway 101 at mileage marker 48.9, and an individual can drive there, whether or not they have the GPS capability that, of course, we're using right now. Next, please. Then when these come back into All this data comes in through the website, but then is downloaded onto my computer that runs the GIS system. They come in as these little blue points, and you can see that some of them don't match up quite like where the name is, where the Coastal Commission has indicated that this will be. So this is the feedback into the Coastal Commission will be when we get all these GPS coordinates set, then we'll be able to give it back to them, and they'll adjust their maps according to the GPS units. And they've indicated this is going to be very valuable for them because they don't have the manpower to go out and do each individual site. Next, please. ArcView and any GIS system contains a very detailed database. This is like behind the map. If you go click in, go behind the map, you can find database information. Next, please. Then one of the things that we think is going to be the most powerful value to the Coastal Conservancy and the Commission is that we're collecting connecting trails and other proposed trails from the different entities that we work with, which is usually county and city. So the county will have a plan, the city will have a plan, and we're trying to put these together. And I'll demonstrate it with this area on the north end of Arcata Bay. Here's our blank map. Nothing's happening yet. Next, please. This is the, in pink, the trail that was utilized by Coastwalk in their Oregon to Mexico trail walk. There, you can see there's both, and I'll use this little pointer, there's a shoreline route over here. This is right on the beach. There's an inland route here that follows roads. And there's also a proposed shoreline route around the north. Well, in the concept of a braided trail, what we're hoping for is that there will be various routes and that they'll all be combined into a trail system. So what we did, we went to this area, the Redwood Community Action Agency, on a grant from the Conservancy, had done some trail planning. So we picked up their information and put it on top of the other one. So here's some of their other trail routes. They have a highway route here and an inland spit route here. All these trails have been evaluated, and so their documentation exists in their reports. But we were able to put it on here and compare and contrast. They evaluated railroad grids here, bike lanes here, and alternatives routes like this. All this, when you pull it together, you can really see a pattern starting to emerge, and you can make your decisions on where to route certain routes, where to put your money into certain projects, by having an overall picture of how it might all fit together. Next, please. And then, with the power of GIS, it also includes being able to overlay other relevant topics. And when we put on the brown lines here, these are parcel lines. And then utilizing this technology, you can figure out which landowners need to be contacted. If we choose this route, we'll go through these people's land. If we choose this route, we go through some public and some private. All those sorts of questions can be really brought to the forefront with this. If you click on a certain parcel, then over here you get the individual's name and address, and those contacts are greatly facilitated. Next, please. We're trying to find all the different places along the route that are inhibited by some sort of means and make a point of them and get the information and photographs. For instance, this one being blocked at higher tides. Next one. That some areas need water taxis in order to be able to get across to the spit and avoid a lot of highway walking. Next, please. And that some that are simply impassable at certain seasons, then we make a point and say that this is an area that's affected by tidal closure.
L technology to be able to access all the information that they will need to enable them, encourage them to get out and use these facilities. So we're very excited about it.
Well, I'll speak on behalf of the board here that I can't imagine a greater gift that any group of volunteers could give to the future inhabitants of this state and present inhabitants than this. It's really spectacular.
amazing amount of work. We're happy to be a part of it, but I can tell that just the money is only a small part. A lot of work. I would think, too, that getting the younger, the high school kids and college kids out with those gizmos, you know, be an interesting project. Well, thank you. Great project.
That concludes the executive officer's report.
All right. One of these days we'll have to have the Conservancy Board take a stint out there on have one of our meetings out in one of these places.
I'll take you all hiking anytime.
Good, thank you. Thank you, Richard. All right, now we are going to have our Attorney General's report. Pat, do you have anything to report?
We'll be having a closed session.
Okay, we're going to have a closed session on litigation. Let me ask, are there any board member comments? Any other public comments? Okay, Betty Winholtz?
Yes.
Thank you, and welcome to Morro Bay again. I'm on the City Council, but I want you to know I'm speaking as a private citizen today. The tone of my comments is a little different than what's been heard so far today, and as I've listened, I've heard that you are in partnership frequently with state parks on different projects. I just want to raise a red flag to you about state parks, at least in San Luis Obispo County, in light of some of events that have come on in our area for the last couple of years. And it has to do, and I bring it to your attention in the spirit of maintaining the integrity of some of the money that you give to them for access and for rehabilitation. I'm going to be very short, but I wish we had time that I could take you around and show you some of the places. Let me briefly say that we've had Sea West Ranch, which you saw on the Coastal Trail, is something that you helped state parks purchase. As long as they've had it, it's still been closed. And I understand from listening earlier that there's a process that you have to go through to develop that. Yet this is a ranch that's been used for decades by people to access the beach, and it's still not been open. So I'm just raising a concern that you know, what's happening. We have other issues where trees have been girdled, ice plant that is home to the endangered Morro shoulder-band snail has been poisoned. My guess is that the money that you've given for that has been in the auspices of getting rid of exotics. Both state parks and you, I know, honor habitat, but in our area, we're feeling like state parks is acting more like a developer than as a preserver of our inhabitants. And so my whole point is to just alert you, please, with a red flag. Look more closely at the kind of projects that they bring to you. I've attended a number of Coastal Commission meetings and State Park Commission meetings, and I'm not sure that this is necessarily unique to our county. We have 11 state parks in our county. And that's a lot. I would guess a third of our coastal land is owned by state parks. In our city limits, probably three-fourths of our coastal land is owned by state parks. But we don't feel like we have input into not just the use, but how it's developed, if it's to be developed. And so I guess I want to ask you, as the money people who encourages them to do these projects, to encourage them to involve us, the public, in our public land, and that we feel that we have input into that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I'll leave a few pictures with you.
Okay. Ron Regan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Conservancy. We really appreciate, as a member of the public, for all the work that you folks have done. I'm a member and a volunteer of the Lighthouse Keepers and a member of the board, and it's Point San Luis Lighthouse, located on a 30-acre bluff overlooking Avila Beach. And our goal is the preservation, restoration, and opening up as much as possible to the general public the gem of the Simple Coast, built in 1890. And we attempt to increase the public access to this historic area. We thank you.
Have you made a request to our staff for that funding?
I'd have to refer that to Carolyn Moffitt, Commissioner.
Okay. Well, good. We've participated in other lighthouse projects. I know up at Point Cabrillo, and I personally think they're great projects. The public has a huge interest in them, and very beautiful on the coast. And
thank you.
Well, good. Hopefully we'll be working with you on these.
Fine. Thank you.
Carolyn Moffitt? Or is it Carolyn or Cardam?
Carolyn.
Carolyn, okay.
Chairman Bosco and board members, thank you very much for being on the Central Coast to allow us the opportunity to address you. I'm here today to thank you for your participation in the development of our master plan and our urban waterfront restoration plan. The district extends from the Cuesta Grade to the Santa Maria River, so it's a large district for our harbor district. And as we began to develop our master plan, it was very difficult to achieve the kind of public input that we wish to have, so that as we worked through the process, we wouldn't have objections after we had gotten well on our way. It was your funding and your support that allowed us to conduct extensive public workshops throughout the district. And as a consequence, the document that we have is very responsive to the public wishes. And as we approach the Board of Supervisors to have it implemented into the local coastal plan, we had no objections whatsoever. And we had full support and participation of our supervisors. Now we will look forward to hopefully the same kind of public support and constructive experience with the Coastal Commission as we go for an amendment to the local coastal plan. We have submitted it. We have submitted our document to the Coastal Commission. And again, I want to thank you for your participation. Further, I would like to invite you to come back to San Luis Obispo County, come out to Port San Luis and experience some of your projects. We have received an extensive grant to begin to implement our master plan from the Coastal Conservancy. Don mentioned the beautiful Point San Luis Lighthouse. It's a Victorian lighthouse. It's truly elegant. And I'd like to invite you all, individually or as a group, to come and join us at the lighthouse sometime in the future. Take a look at the port and enjoy. And again, I thank you all very much for your participation at the port.
Thank you, Carolyn. You've been on the Harbor Board for how many years? 17
years. There's just these pet projects, and I have to admit that they are, and certainly the lighthouse is one. The Harbor Terrace, our master plan is divided into seven geographic areas, and some of them are public access projects, and some of them are funding projects. Our Harbor Terrace is a 27-acre parcel behind the port. And it's critical that we begin to provide public access to that, and we intend to provide a multimodal visitor-serving facility up there. And until those kinds of projects are completed, and I'm assured of the financial stability and sustainability of the port, I'm going to keep on.
Well, good. I hope so. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll take you up on your invitation to come back. I really, as one board member, would encourage you to approach us with this lighthouse project. I think they're always great projects. All right, now we're going to go into executive session. There's something I have to read, isn't there? And that is that pursuant to Government Code Section 11126E, so thank everyone.